All right, morning. Today's daf in Zvachim is Kuf Yud Ches. Last couple of daffin within the Masechta. Our discussion has been for the last couple of days, the history of Karbanos and when exactly we brought Karbanos, and under what stages and what eras were Karbanos brought, where were they brought, who brought them, and what kind of Karbanos could actually be brought during this period of time. So we basically covered a big swatch of history, Mishahu Kama Mishkan, in other words, before the Mishkan was actually set up in the desert. So we already spent some time discussing that. Then we talked about what happens when the Mishkan was set up in the desert. And then we spent a considerable amount of time, and we're going to be doing so this morning, talking about the 14 years in Gilgal. The 14 years in Gilgal, an interesting scenario where we go from the desert into Eretz Yisrael, and for those 14 years, so 7 of those years was for the conquering of the land, 7 of those years was for the division of the land amongst the 12 Shvatim. So during these 14 years, so there was a stage of Karbanos history where there was what's called Heter Bamos. Heter Bamos means that there was an allowance given to every one of us to bring a carbon in our backyard. Even though there was somewhat of a central location of the Mishkan in Gilgal, but it was not considered a permanent location. Shiloh was considered a permanent location, which we're going to get to later this morning, but Gilgal was not considered a permanent location, and therefore Karbanos were decentralized, and every one of us was allowed to bring a carbon in our backyard. That's the big idea. Now everything now is the details, and the details are exactly what could be brought in our backyards, what could be brought in Gilgal. And that was we saw together a brisa on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, a machlokus, a no less than 5-way machlokus in terms of what exactly was brought where. What I'd like to do right now is I'm going to go back to Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. We're going to read the brisa again. The brisa over here has all 5 opinions. I just want to get more familiar with the language of the brisa, so we're going to be reading the brisa together inside Tana Rabbanan. So this is just for us going to be a step backwards. But It's really invaluable in terms of getting everything straight. The Braisa reads to the Tana Rabbanan. This is Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, halfway down the Amud. Kol nidav v'nidav ha'yikra bebama, she'i nidav v'nidav enkra bebama. So anything which was voluntary could be offered on a bama. Anything which was not voluntary cannot be offered on a bama. Mincha v'nizirus kreva bebama divrei Rebbe Meir. A carbon mincha together with your carbon for nizirus. Nizirus, at the conclusion of nizirus, a person is obligated to bring 3 carbonos, an ola, a shlamim, and a chatas. So they're all offered on a bama. This is all according to the opinion of Rebbe Meir. So we have the first opinion in the brisa, that of Rebbe Meir, that says that the only thing that you can offer is voluntary offerings. Chachamim Omrim, the second opinion in the Braisa, Lo Karvu Yachid Ela Ola Vishlamim Bilvad. The only thing that an individual brought was Ola Vishlamim. As we noted in yesterday's daf, what's the difference between Rav Meir and the Chachamim? So the difference, of course, is that according to the Chachamim, you do not bring a mincha. A mincha is not brought on Bama Katanas, on the small bamas in our backyard. And according to the Chachamim also, he doesn't view the carbon of a Nazir of that of a voluntary carbon, but rather of an obligatory carbon. We discussed that yesterday. Third opinion, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Shatibur V'Hayachid Makrivim Ba'ol Moed, Shebe Midbar Makrivim Ba'ol Moed Shebegilgal. According to Rav Yehuda, there's no difference between the Mishkan that was set up in the desert and the Mishkan that was set up in Gilgal. Whatever was offered on the Mizbeach in the desert was offered in the Mizbeach in Gilgal. Ma bein olam Moshe b'midbar lebein olam Moshe b'Gilgal. So then what's the difference if there is no difference? So olam Moshe b'midbar lo hayu habamos mutaros. Olam Moshe b'Gilgal lo hayu habamos mutaros. So the difference, of course, is that in the desert, so there was only one location to bring carbon, and that, of course, is the Mishkan. Once we got to Gilgal, so then there was allowance for people to bring carbonos in their backyard. Ella, And the only thing that could be offered in your backyard is only Ola and Shlamim. That is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, which we're going to start off this morning explaining. And then v'chachamim omrim, kol she'atibar makrivim ba'olamoi, she'bemidbar makrivim ba'olamoi she'begilgal. The chachamim over here seem to be saying exactly what we learned previously. V'kam v'kam lo kirvu yachid ela ola v'shlamim b'vad, and the only thing that was offered was ola and shlamim by itself. It seems to be that the chachamim are just simply a repetition of what we just stated. Later this morning, we're going to see what the difference is between the chachamim and the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And finally, the fifth Shita of the Braisa, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af Sibar Lo Hikrivo Ela Sachim. According to Rabbi Shimon, the community only brought Karban Pesach and Chove Shekavu Lamzman, and only those obligations that are calendarically based. Okay, a number of things to point out before we continue in today's daf. Number one, This is an important Rashi that comes up in yesterday's daf. If you stay on Kuf Yizayin Amud Aleph and you take a look at Rashi, so Rashi, Kol Shahatzibar Vayachim Akriv Ma'ol Moish Shabemidbar. Rashi is lines are starting to get wide. It's about 8 lines down from there. And the Rashi says as follows: Dahinu kol karbanos kulin nedarim nedavos chovos makrivim ba'ol moish shebagilgal dihi ba'megadola. So this is Rashi now explaining the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that everything can be offered on the ba'megadola, voluntary offerings and obligatory offerings as well. And Rashi goes on to point out v'hashta palag adrameir ve'adrabanan. Rabbi Yehuda over here is making a departure from the opinions of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The midik tani kol shatzibor lashmin and the ein chilik ba'ol moish be'midbar lo moish be'gilgal. Meaning, it's only Rabbi Yehuda who introduces us to this idea that the ol moed that's set up in Gilgal is the same as the ol moed set up in the Mishkan. Mechlal d'shamin l'Rabbi Meir v'Rabbanan darmi yesh chilik. And that means now that the first two opinions of the Braisa, both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, obviously feel that there's a difference between the Ol Moed set up in Gilgal and that of the Midbar. What is the difference? Umachilko, Shein Yachid Makribo Chovos. The individual does not bring an obligation, not even on Gilgal, according to the first two opinions. Meaning that according to the Chachamim and according to Rav Meir, the first two opinions of the Braisa, the only thing an individual brings during these 14 years are only voluntary karbanos, and that's including even the Bama Gedola, even the central Bama of Gilgal. Okay, and according to Rav Meir, Mincha and Nazirus as well. So now, as Rashi now clarifies for us, the first two opinions are really a limited position, meaning the first two opinions of the Braisa, both Rav Meir and the Chachamim, have it that an individual does not bring an obligatory karban. That means that during those 14 years, if anyone's chayv a karban chatas, there's just simply no location to bring the karban chatas. It's a little bit strange, of course, meaning that there is a mizbeach and there is a temporary base of mikdash set up, but there's no place for a chatas to be brought, an individual chatas to be brought. And that is simply, we'll see the drashas later on this morning, but that's the opinion of Reb Meir and the Chachamim. Again, subtle differences between the two in terms of mincha and in terms of the karban nazir, but they both agree that an individual does not bring a chova, an obligatory karban, during those 14 years. It's Rav Yehuda who makes this big departure, where Rav Yehuda says, I know that in Gilgal is a central location. The Gilgal is no different than the Mishkan. Just like in the Mishkan, all karbanos are brought on the Mishkan, including obligatory karbanos. Same thing is going to be true in Gilgal as well. Okay, this is just a point that I feel like I didn't highlight strongly enough yesterday, and so I have an opportunity to highlight it this morning. Okay, we are now going to turn to Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. We're going to start about 5 lines from the bottom of the Amud with the words Amar Mar. Okay, so we are now continuing. In the Gemara yesterday, we explored the opinions of Rav Meir and the Chachamim, and we went over the sources for the two positions. Amar Mar, this is now continuation. This now takes us to the Chachamim. Now, this is the Chachamim who disagree with Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Amar Mar, Chachamim, Amar, Kol Shatzibar, Makrim, Ba'ol, V'chulei, My Time, Ad Rabbanim. What's the basis? What's the reason behind the Chachamim? So, Amar Kra Ish Asher Yashar Be'inav Yasu. So the pasuk again. We go to this week's sedra. The pasuk we're quoting right now is not from this week's sedra. It's from Sefer Shoftim. Okay, similar to this week's sedra, the same idea with the word yasher. Ish yasher beinav yase. Ish yashers hu delikrav chovas olikrav. So when it comes to an individual, so he can only bring yashas. If you remember yesterday's daf, yesterday we pointed out that the word yashar in this context means karbanos which are voluntary. So an individual brings a voluntary karban, but he does not bring an obligatory karban. V'tzibur afil chovos likarav. Now, as far as the tzibur is concerned, as far as the community is concerned, so they bring karbanos which are obligatory. And then v'Rabbi Yehuda amlecha. So, and as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, so Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that an individual could bring his karbanos on the central location. Rav Yehuda Amlecha, we're now on the top of Kuf Yechesim and Aleph, Kiksiv Hayashar Be'enav Hu Dichsiv. When it says Hayashar, which again is a reference to voluntary offerings, that's going specifically on the words Be'enav, meaning in his eyes, meaning on the individual. Ava b'bam gedola afilu chavas nami likarev. But when it comes to the bama gedola, according to Rav Yehuda, so then the individual can bring his obligatory karbanos on the central location of Gilgal. Ela haksiv ish. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. It sounds like from the Psukim that Ish, meaning on an individual basis, he can only bring Yashrus, which means that he can only bring voluntary offerings. So a simple reading of the Psukim would seem to indicate that an individual during these years, during these 14 years, simply is not afforded the opportunity to bring karbanos, which are chovos, which are obligations. So the Gemara's response is, kiksiv ish lahachshir sazar. No, the word ish over here is just simply to tell me that during these 14 years, when individuals bring karbanos in their backyard, so they don't need to call in their local kohen. They can offer the karbanos themselves. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? We knew that already. Zar, mi vizarka konis adam al mizbech Hashem nafka. We already have a pasuk that tells us that a non-kohen can do the avoda in one's own private bama. How do I know that? The pasuk says that the kohen does the zrika on mizbech Hashem. Mizbech Hashem means the central location, which implicit in that pasuk is the idea that if it's not a centrally located mizbeach, meaning it's during one of the years where there was a heter bamos, so you don't need a kohen to offer over there. So ma'u detem alibay kiddush becharos kemikara kamashmalan. The Gemara says, yeah, but I'll tell you what. If all I had was that pasuk, I would have entertained the following havamina. As we learned in yesterday's daf, before the Mishkan was set up, avoda was only to be done by the becharos. So now consider, you had a historical period, a long historical period of time when the Bechoros were the ones doing the Avoda. Once the Mishkan was set up, so then that responsibility was transferred from the Bechoros, from the firstborns, over to the Kohanim. Now you go to Gilgal, and now there's an opportunity where you can have non-Kohanim do the Avoda, that is, on the private Bamas. So here, the Havamina, it's actually a very strong Havamina. One would have entertained the idea that what should happen now is we should revert back to what was done before Mishkan. Before Mishkan, it was done by the Becharos. So now, during these 14 years on the Bama Ketana, so the Havamina would have been that this should be done by the Becharos. That's why, says the Gemara, I need an additional pasuk to clarify and to make as clear as possible that it can only be that the bamas could be operated by anybody. It doesn't have to be a kohen, doesn't even have to be a bechor. It could literally be anyone operating during these 14 years. Continuing in the Gemara, Chachamim Hainu Tanakama. The Gemara now notes, as we did in the beginning of this year, we reviewed the five opinions that were reported on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph in terms of what was offered in Gilgal versus what was offered in the Bama Ketanos. And if you look and you read the Chachamim and you read the Chachamim, meaning the Chachamim come up twice in the Braisa. They come up as opinion number 2 and opinion number 4, separated by the opinion of Rev Yehuda. But it seems to be that the Chachamim and the Chachamim are basically saying the same thing. So the Gemara says, Chachamim Hainu Tanakama. So So what is the difference between them? It seems to be that they're saying the same thing. Answers the Gemara. So So the Gemara says there is a subtle difference between them, and that is our Nesachim coming along in the Midbar together with the Karbanos. We know that once we get into Yerushalayim, into the Beis HaMikdash, so with every carbon comes a Sachim. That's the Torah articulates very clearly. Is there a Nesachim requirement even during the years of the desert? And the Gemara says that that is going to be the fine difference. It's a small, but it is a halachic difference between the opinions of the first Chacham and the second Chacham. Which one takes which position? So if you take a look at Rashi, I'm not going to go through the Rashi inside right now, but if you take a look at the Rashi, Dibra Amaskel, Kivra Nesachim, Bebinbarik, Benayhu, so Rashi says that the second Chachamim are coming to add on to the first Chachamim, and that means that the opinion of the second Chachamim are the ones that say that the Nesachim come in conjunction with every carbon. All right, well, let's continue in the Gemara. Amar Mar Rebbe Shimon Omer V'chulei. Okay, we're now up to the fifth opinion, so again, in terms of the structure of the Gemara, we are now focusing on the 14 years in Gilgal. We're looking at this period of time where there was a heter bamos. People were allowed to bring karbanos in their own, in the privacy of their own home. Right? I keep saying the backyard. The Gemara yesterday said it was on the rooftops. But in any event, so during these 14 years, what could be brought by individuals on the central Mizbeach, meaning in Gilgal, and what could be brought by individuals on their own private bamas. So there are no less than five opinions in the Braisa, and now we're focusing on the fifth opinion. The fifth opinion belongs to Rabbi Shimon. He says that even on the public bama, the only thing that could be brought are Karban Pesach and obligations that are calendaric. Meaning, what is he excluding from that list in terms of what is he excluding from this list in terms of what could be brought in Gilgal? So Rashi points out, we saw this Rashi yesterday, just to review. Rashi writes on the bottom of Kuf Yud and Aleph, Rabbi Shimon Palig Akulu. Rabbi Shimon's arguing on everyone above. The Kulu Sfir Lahu Dein Chiluk Lefibar Bein Mebele Gilgal Bebama Gedol of Rabbi Shimon Omer Aft Sibar Atzmam Lo Hikriva Begedola Yosem Yachib Bekatana. So Rabbi Shimon actually is the most limiting position of all five positions. Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that just like an individual is capped in terms of what he can bring on his own private bama, even the community is capped in terms of what they could bring on the Gilgal. Gilgal, the only thing you could bring are only carbon sebor, only public carbonos that are calendaric. So let's say, for example, I'll throw out a couple of examples. Let's say Parhelm Davishov sebor, which is a community carbon, and it's an obligation, but it's not calendaric. It has nothing to do with the calendar. It has to do with whether or not the Sanhedrin made a mistake, and the majority of the Jewish people followed it. So according to Rabbi Shimon, there is no place to bring that carbon. You don't bring the carbon on the Bama Katana, nor do you bring that carbon on the Bama Gadola. Same thing if it's the Seir of Avodah Zarah. Same basic idea. Where if the community were to do Avodah Zarah, so there'd just simply be no location to bring that carbon. So Rabbi Shimon is the most limiting position. And now the Gemara is going to give us a source for Rabbi Shimon. Amar Mar, Rabbi Shimon Omer v'chule, my taima, what is the reason behind Rabbi Shimon? Yasu b'nei Yisrael sa'pesach b'gilgal. So b'nei Yisrael offered the Karban Pesach in Gilgal. So this is now the Navi in Yerushua reporting the first Karban Pesach that's brought in Eretz Yisrael. So they offered it in Gilgal, Pshita. So the Gemara says, and now that is obvious. What the Navi is trying to teach us, according to Rabbi Shimon, is that it's not just that the Navi is giving us a little revelation of which carbonos they brought, but actually the Navi is there to teach us in terms of halachically what we're allowed to bring in Gilgal, and the only thing we're allowed to bring in Gilgal is Karban Pesach and the like. So halav kain Pesach lo krav. If it doesn't resemble the Karban Pesach, so then it's not offered. So now, what does that mean, resembling the Karban Pesach? So it means two things. One, it means that it has to be a carbon seaborn, it has to be a communal offering. And two, it has to be calendaric, it has to be connected to the calendar. So only if I have those two facets am I allowed to bring the carbon on Gilgal. Otherwise, I'm not allowed to bring it on Gilgal. The Idach. Now, if you disagree with Rabbi Shimon, and as we learned back in the Braisa, there are four Tanaim who disagree with Rabbi Shimon. So what are you going to do with this Pasuk? What's the Chiddush of the Pasuk that we brought a Karban Pesach in Gilgal? Mibailelecha de Rabbi Yochanan. So no, the Pasuk there is coming to teach us something, but specifically that which Rabbi Yochanan taught us. The Amr of Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Bana Aram Lekabel Hazal, that a non-circumcised person can receive the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma. That's what we learned from that Parsha. Now, what exactly does that mean? So everybody, please stay with me. This is going to get a little bit complicated, but it's not that bad. Take a look at Rashi with the words Aral. So Rashi over here gives us the background information in terms of, again, what we're trying to do is learn out what do we gain by the Navi in Sefer Yehoshua teaching us that the offered Karban Pesach in Gilgal. It seems to be rather obvious. In other words, if they're in Eretz Yisrael and it's the 14th day of Nisan, so of course they're going to offer the Karban Pesach. What's the Chiddush therein? So there is a Chiddush, and what Rabbi Yochanan's teaching us is that the Chiddush is regarding the sprinkling of the Parah Aduma on somebody who is not circumcised. And what he's arguing is that we learn from Sefer Yehoshua that it works. How do we learn that from Sefer Yehoshua? So please stay with me now as we're going to go through a Rashi together. Right, every detail in this Rashi is super important just in terms of navigating through the conclusion. Arel, Rashi is more than halfway down on the page. The first word in the line in Rashi is Debar Lema'abed Pesach, and then Dibra Hamaskel is Arel, and Rashi writes, Shinitma b'meis mekabel hazar, that if you are not circumcised, you could still receive be sprinkled with the hazar of the paraduma v'tahor mitumas meis, liga b'kachim, and that will totally remove the Tumas Mace. How does that work? Rashi continues. V'yalav mehacha, we learned it from here. D'chsiv ha'yesu etz ha'petzach b'gogol d'mash m'shasu k'hochaso b'mila b'tahara v'ruban arelin hayu b'midbar. So Rashi over here says, first of all, by the Navi telling us that they offered the Karban Pesach, the assumption is that it was offered in a state of tahara, meaning that the Jewish people were in fact pure when they offered it. Now, we also know, says Rashi, that the majority of the Jewish people, as they crossed the Jordan to go into Eretz Yisrael, were not circumcised. Dichsiv lo malu v'aminu b'yavamos b'asar b'nisan sh'avros yarden lo malu mishum chol shadorcha. So now let's go over those dates on which they entered into Eretz Yisrael. So we know the Navi tells us that they came into Eretz Yisrael on the 10th day of Nisan. That's only 4 days till the first Karban Pesach. So they had four days. Now remember, Rashi, as Rashi just pointed out, that the vast majority of them were not circumcised. So they had to circumcise. So Rashi here points out they didn't get a circumcision on day number 10, the 10th day of Nisan, Chol Shad Orcha. In other words, they just landed that day, right? For those of us who travel. So that's a travel day. So they didn't get a mila on the 10th. Ela bechadsrehu demaho. They got a bris mila on the 11th. Now Rashi also notes that you remember that the vast majority of them also came into contact with a mace. In other words, those 40 years of being in the desert, so everyone encountered death, meaning the whole generation died. So the majority of them going into Eretz Yisrael were both uncircumcised and tamei mace. And v'im lo kiblo hazav nitar ba'er lo sehem in lahem shals hazos mishamalu. Now, there's simply, Rashi over here points out now what is the logical conclusion. There is simply not time enough for everyone to both get a mila and to go and to start the tahara process. We know the tahara process with the paraduma, with the ashes of the paraduma, is a 7-day process requiring sprinkling both on day 3 and on day 7. So now consider, says Rashi, that they only got a bris mila on day 11, and they're offering the Karban Pesach now 3 days later, 11, 12, 13, 14. So now there is simply no way for them to get a sprinkling of the paraduma after they were circumcised. Rashi says, "Dehat tzarich lahafir shlosha yamim bein hazal lahazal." You need 3 day separation between one sprinkling and the other. Revi chamisha v'shishi. V'kan ilo hazu ad yom echad asar b'nisan hazal rishon al achar shemalu sulo matiz man hazal shnei ad yom chamisha asar. If they would have been sprinkled on day 11 after their mila, their next opportunity to receive a sprinkling is only going to be on the 15th day of Nisan, which of course now is too late to bring the Karban Pesach. You put all this information together, says Rashi, and you realize that that's exactly what the Gemara's point is that they got the Hazah, they were sprinkled with the Paraduma even before they received the Mila. And even though that's true, it must be that it works, meaning we're working with the assumption that when they offered the Karban Pesach in Gilgal for that first year, they did so in a state of Tahara. Ergo, says Rashi, meaning this is just simply explaining the Gemara, it must be that they were sprinkled with the Paraduma before the 11th day of Nisan, meaning before their actual Bris Mila. Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of the Rashi's explanation of this position. We are back to the Gemara. We are on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Aleph. We're halfway down on the Amud. Tani Tanakami de Rav Adar Ba'ava. The following brisa was taught to Rav Adar Ba'ava. Ein be Bama Gadol and Bama Katana. What's the difference between Bama Gadol and Bama Katana? Now again, every time we see these words, the context in this context it means the central mizbech in Gilgal versus people's bamas in their backyard. Ela Pesach v'chovas akavu lehem zman. The differences are Karban Pesach and obligations which are calendaric. So, skip the parentheses. So that is the brisa. Amar le, when Rav Ada Ba'ava hears the brisa, so he says titakei mas nisech ba'olas chova, deika olas nadava. So if we're contrasting between a carbon which is an obligation versus a carbon which is voluntary, the best carbon that it could be describing as a carbon ola. Why? De'ichatas yachid hu dechovas dekviya lehizman mi'ika. So the Gemara says it can't be talking about a carbon chatas because by a carbon chatas we don't have a chova dekviya lehizman. We don't have any kind of chatas which is calendaric. V'lukma b'mincha. So the Gemara says, b'minchas chova, d'ha'ika chavitin. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? The Braisa could be talking about a carbon mincha. There is a public carbon mincha, and there's also a private carbon mincha as well. So the Gemara says, kasavre e mincha babam. The author of this Braisa is of the opinion, or it could be that Rav Ada Bar Ava is of the opinion, that menachas were not offered on a... were not offered on the Bama, and that's why he refused to interpret the Braisa as it referring to a carbon mincha, and therefore the only Braisa that's referring to is a carbon ola. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the sugya, and now we move forward. So, we have now covered historically the period before the Mishkan was set up, during the time the Mishkan was set up, from entering into Eretz Yisrael the next 14 years, that's Gilgal, where there was a Heter Bamos. And now we're moving over to Shiloh. Shiloh, we know now, is a more centrally located Beis HaMikdash. It's obviously not the permanent settlement of the Beis HaMikdash. That's going to happen in Yerushalayim. But Shiloh, however, covered a good amount of Jewish history, 369 years. The Mishkan was set up in Shiloh. Shiloh now, because it's a central location, because the Aron is found in Shiloh at all times, so therefore there was no longer a Heter Bamos. So during these 369 years, we were not allowed to offer carbonos anymore in our backyards. If we wanted to offer carbon, we had to go to Shiloh. A number of interesting details, now this takes us all the way back to the Mishkan, Kufyud Beis Amud Beis, a number of interesting details were told to us regarding the Mishkan that was set up in Shiloh, and I'm going back to the Mishnah all the way back in Kufyud Beis Amud Beis. I'm just rereading the Mishnah. Ba'u l'Shiloh, once they get to Shiloh, Nesru ha'bamos, bamos now become forbidden. V'la yesham tikra. Shiloh did not have a regular roof, a hard top roof. Ela beis avanim b'vad melamatam v'hayirios melamalan. It had a stone walls, but in terms of the roof was made up of just curtains. V'hayisa menucha, and this is a reference to menucha, meaning in this week's Sedra, we're going to see that once we get to Menucha v'Nachla, so Menucha is a reference to Shiloh. And then in terms of what could be eaten, so Kachi Kedoshim Lifnim and Aklaim, in terms of Chatas Osham, Kivsei Atzeres, the Kachi Kedoshim, they can only be eaten within the curtains of Shiloh. V'Kachim Kalim U'Maiser Sheni B'Chol HaRoeh. As far as Kachim Kalim and Maiser Sheni is concerned, that can be consumed B'Chol HaRoeh. From any vantage point where you could see Shiloh. Okay. Adkan, that's the end of the Mishnah and its description. We are now in the Gemara. We're at the two dots, Ba'alu Shiloh, Menaha Nemili. The Gemara's first question over here is, how do I know? And the Gemara now is asking regarding the detail that was given to us in the Mishnah, that it had stone walls but a curtain top. Amar B'chia Baraba, Amar V'yochanan Katzvechan, Amar V'tivine Beis Hashem Shiloh. On one hand, it's called Beis Hashem. Beis Hashem sounds like it's a house, sounds like it's a structure. The Katzvechan, Amar V'yitosh Mishkan Shiloh. Oel Shachin ba'adam. So in another pasuk, it sounds like it's more like a tent. Uksiv vayimas be'oel Yosef v'shevet laf Ephraim lo bachar. So, and again, another pasuk also sounds like it's ohel, like it's a tent. So haketsa lo haisa sham tikra elavanim lamat v'yiros melamalam v'hi aisa menucha. So the basically the synthesis of these two pasukim is that it was a hybrid. It was somewhere between a house and a tent. House in terms of the walls. Walls were made up of stone, but in terms of the top was made up of a curtain. Okay, why exactly did it have the structure of being a hybrid of being both a slightly more permanent, but a curtain top? So I would say simple pshat. The simple pshat over here is that, in other words, on one hand, it is a central location, and there's no longer a Heter Bamos, and it will be here for 369 years, but on the other hand, it is not going to be the permanent fixture and the permanent location of the Beis HaMikdash. So to reflect both of these ideas, so that's why Mishkan Shiloh had this hybrid look to it of being made up of walls and a curtain on the top as its roof. Kachay Kadashim, we're continuing in the Gemara. We are in Kufyat Chesamad Aleph. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. Menahani Mili, how do I know? Am Rabbi Yoshi Amakra, Hishamalacha Pentalalosecha Bechoma Kamasher, Tir'e, Bechol makom asher tire I atamala ava ata ochel bechol makom shata roe. So the pasuk again in this week's sedra says that you have to be careful bechol makom asher tire, from any vantage point where you see, meaning even though you see the Mishkan, you can't offer the karban. Now the Gemara makes the following diuk: I can't offer the karban if I'm standing in a place where I can see where I can see Shiloh, but I'm allowed to eat the karban. Now, can't be talking about Kasha Kedoshim. As we know, Kasha Kedoshim has to be eaten within the curtains, so it must be talking about Kashim Kalim. Ema b'chol makom shata roa yatamala aval tazovech b'chol makom shatira amraviana amakras shamtala v'shamtase. That's talking about specifically in reference to Shiloh. The pasuk says, there you should offer, and there you should do. Rav Avdimi Bar Chasa Amar Amakra Velo Sa'anes Shilo Makom Shekol Arova Osa Mit Anech Alav Alachilas Kachim Shelo. So the Gemara quotes a pasuk, really interesting. If you take a look at the top Rashi on Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, Rashi says, where can this pasuk be found? So Rashi says, I'm not sure. Now already, even before we got to Rashi, you knew that there was a bit of a problem in terms of identifying where this pasuk is, because generally on the margin of the Gemara tells us where to find this pasuk. After Gemara quotes this pasuk, you look on the side, so you'll see that there is no reference in terms of where to find this pasuk. So Rashi already notes that this pasuk doesn't really exist. What the Gemara is doing is the Gemara is just simply paraphrasing. Look at Rashi. Chipasti velo matzasiv. I was looking around, but I couldn't find it. Bimikra. Aval mitzasiv mizracha te'ina shilo. Okay, so I found a pasuk that's very similar. And it's not the first time that the Gemara, instead of quoting the pasuk, paraphrases the pasuk. So maybe that's what the Gemara is doing over here. But anyway, the point of the drasha goes like this, is that the anyone who sees the makom of Shiloh, the place of Shiloh, is going to groan. That's the word te'inas from the word mitaneach. He's going to groan al achilas kachim shiloh, meaning because at one point in time there was an allowance to eat it just from having a vantage point of being able to see the Mishkan of Shiloh. Rabbi Abba Amar Amakra ben Paras Yosef ben Paras alei ayin. The pasuk where Yaakov gives a bracha to Yosef, so describes how he is somebody who is alei ayin, which we in other Gemaras translate it as being ole min ayin. He's above the eye, meaning ayin. He's not subject to ayin hara. Ayin shelo rasus alazon velehenos midavishena shelo tizak v'tochel kamelo eineha. So, but the Gemara over here darshins it in a different manner. Our Gemara understands it to mean that because Yosef did not satiate himself with that which he saw, a reference to Eshes Potiphar, where Yosef was able to fight and defeat his Yetzirah and not be tempted by the wife of Potiphar, and so because he was able to navigate and control that which he saw, so as a result of that, when the Mishkan was built in Shiloh, which was in the section of Yosef, so there was an allowance that was given that anyone can eat carbon from any vantage place in which they saw. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chinin Amar, V'ratzon Shoch Niseh, Ayin Shelo Ratzel Leanos Medav Hashem Shelo, Tizaka V'tochal Bein Hasnu'im. So the Gemara has another way to understand, to arrive at this conclusion, and that is the pasuk says, Shoch Niseh. So Shoch Niseh can be understood as dwelling amongst the enemies. Meaning, let's assume that the brothers made up at the end, but there was a period of time where Yosef and his brothers were enemies. And meanwhile, what can happen is that you could be in Shiloh, which is the place of Yosef, the territory of Yosef, and you can be eating karbanos bein hasnuin amongst the enemies, meaning amongst the other shvatim who are enemies. Tana, we learned on a braisa, roa she'amru ro kulo v'lo hamaspik beino leveino. You have to, in other words, in order to have this allowance to eat kachim kalim within a viewing distance of Shiloh, you have to see Shiloh and there could be nothing separating your vantage point. He says, I'll give you an example. If you go to the shul Ma'on, so you will see Shiloh in its entirety. It would help us, of course, if we knew the shul in Ma'on. But in other words, from their vantage point, from their historical period, so this was a good example. Amra Papa Rosh Amra Lo Ro Kulo Ella Roa Mixaso. You don't have to see every part of Shiloh. As long as you see part of Mishkan Shiloh, that would be enough in order to allow you to eat Shlamim. Bai Rapapa Omid Varo Yosheve Nora Mai. Rav Papa asks the question, let's say you can see Shiloh, but only when you're standing. When you're sitting down, you can't see Shiloh. What would be the halacha? Are you still afforded the allowance to eat shlamim? By Rav Yirmiyah, omed al gabe hanacha v'roa, b'soch hanacha v'ino ramai. Rav Yirmiyah has a follow-up question. What if you are in the gorge and you cannot see Shiloh, but once you're standing on the top of the gorge, you can't see Shiloh, so is that considered being able to see? Teku, the Gemara leaves these questions unresolved. It is, of course, interesting that the Gemara here is asking questions. Rav Papa, Rav Yirmiyah are asking halachic questions regarding the allowance to eat shlamim vis-a-vis Shiloh. This is really historical, meaning that this was a special allowance that was only given for the years that the Mishkan was set up in Shiloh. It doesn't have relevancy in terms of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, you eat shlamim as long as you're within the walls of Yerushalayim. So why these Amoraim are taking the time to ask questions regarding Shiloh, halachic questions regarding Shiloh, perhaps, but again, I'm just speculating, perhaps there is applications to this in other areas of halacha, but I cannot, off the top of my head, I can't think of an example. Ki asa Rav Dimi Amar Rebbe. Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael and he quotes Rebbe. And the teaching of Rebbe goes as follows. Bishlosh mekom shasa shechina Yisrael. Three places where there was shechina that was shorah on the Jewish people. Now, over here, I know we're going to list four places and it opens up with the number three. So let's assume right now that Novi and Givon are really one. So Shiloh, Novi Givon, Ubeis Olamim. So location number one is Shiloh. Number two is Novi and Givon. We'll couple those together. After tomorrow's daf, you'll understand much better why Novi and Givon are coupled together. And Beis Olamim is a reference to Yerushalayim. Uve kulan lo sharsa ela bechelek binyamin. And in all of these, so every time that the Shechina comes down and rests on these locations, it was in the territory of Binyamin. The Gemara is going to challenge that in just a moment. Meaning, we've spent already a good amount of this Amud learning together that Shiloh was situated in the territory of Yosef. Okay, so that's obviously difficult, and the Gemara is going to get to it. Shenamar, now how do I know this? Chofef alav kol hayom, chofifos lo hayu ala b'chelko shel Binyamin. Every time that Binyamin stressed, remember we discussed this earlier in the Masechta, that Binyamin stressed over being the host, being the territory in which the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash are going to be situated. And because he was chofef, because he was stressing over it so much, so therefore it gave him the schus of being the host of the Shechina. And what the Gemara is teaching us is every time, meaning this is going to be true for Shiloh, for Novi and Givon, and for the Beis HaMikdash. By the way, conspicuously absent from this list is Gilgal. In other words, we spent a good amount of this morning talking about the 14 years in Gilgal, and over here, Gilgal does not make the list of those places where there was Hashras Hashchina. So, and it can't be just. I don't have an answer to this question, but it can be that while Gilgal is only temporary, and there was a Heter Bamos, and that's why it wasn't included, because we know the same thing is true regarding Novi and Givon. Novi and Givon were temporary locations, and there was a Heter Bamos during the years of Novi and Givon. So, okay, I'm simply pointing out that Gilgal is off the list over here. Ki azol Abaye Amri kama de Rav Yosef. Abaye goes and says the following in front of Rav Yosef. Amar chad bura. I'm sorry. Ki azol Abaye Amri kama de Rav Yosef. Sorry. Abaye goes and reports exactly what we just learned together in front of Rav Yosef, meaning this teaching that we just learned together, that the three times that the Shechina is resting on a Beis HaMikdash, so it was in the territory of Binyamin. So when Abaye reports this over to Rav Yosef, Amar. So Rav Yosef has a very sharp response, and I caution the listener, it's really sharp. Chadbra havala lekailo. You know, Kailo had one son. Who is Kailo? So Rashi over here says, look, I have never heard the name before, and we're talking about Abaye, so it must be that the father of Abaye, his name was Kailo, Rashi writes. So in terms of how many times this is reported throughout Chas, I don't know if there's any other time. So we may be learning today in the end of Zvachim for the first time, and maybe the only time, the name of Abaye's father. Anyway, Chad brat havala lekailo. So Abaye, Kailo had one son, meaning Abaye, v'lo mitkan, and he says things which are just simply not correct. So this is Rav Yosef's sharp response, retort to Abaye, for making the statement that all the hashra'as of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world is in the territory of Binyamin. So what do you mean? We have Pesukim, we already quoted them earlier this morning, but we're quoting them again. It sounds like Shiloh was located in the chelik of Yosef, specifically Ephraim. So Amrav Adar Maika Kashale, Dilma Shechina Bechelik Binyamin, V'Sanhedrin Gedol Bechelik Yosef. So the Gemara says, well, I'm sorry, Midematzin Bebeis Olam, Midashchina Bechelik Lushal Binyamin, V'Sanhedrin Bechelik Yehuda. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what we could suggest is that the Mishkan of Shiloh was in the territory of Binyamin, and next to it, proximate to the Mishkan, of course, is the Sanhedrin, and that was in the location of Yosef. Just like in the Beis HaMikdash, we had a similar construct where the Mizbech and the Beis HaMikdash was in the section of Binyamin, and the Sanhedrin, which was right next to it, was in the section of Yehuda. So can we argue that? So Amalei Hachi Hashta, Hasa Mikravin Achlos Gabi Hadadi Hachami Mikravin. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a good answer. Because unlike Yehuda and Binyamin, we're actually bordering one on the other, so you could make such an argument. But over here, Yosef and Binyamin are not close to one another from a territory standpoint. So this answer does not work. So the Gemara says, Hachanami Mikarvan. So the Gemara says, okay, look, even though territorial wise, Yosef and Binyamin are not next to one another, we could still advance the suggestion that a strip of land went out from the section of Binyamin into the section of Yosef, so that when Shiloh was set up, from a territory standpoint, it could be actually situated in the territory of Binyamin, even though, for the most part, it is Yosef's territory. But we could still suggest that there was a strip of land that went out from Binyamin into the territory of Yosef, just like we said earlier regarding the strip of land that went out from Yehuda and that went into Binyamin. Kitanai. Okay, the Gemara continues to debate this very issue in terms of Shiloh was situated in whose territory. Chofef alav zeh mikdash rishon kol hayom zeh mikdash sheni uben ketefav shachein elu yimos ha-mashiach. So according to the first opinion of the Braisa, so the first base of Mikdash, the second base of Mikdash, the third base of Mikdash, so they are all going to be situated in Binyamin's chelek. Rabbi Omer chofef alav zeh olam hazeh kol hayom elu yimos ha-mashiach uben ketefav shachein zeh olam haba. And according to Rebbe, so the stress and anxiety that was suffered by Yosef by Binyamin, had nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash and the location of the Beis HaMikdash. It was just in terms of the portions he's going to be receiving in there during the periods of the Yemos HaMashiach and Olam Haba. Tanu Rabbanan. We're going to finish up this morning to get to the two dots and the end of the Amud. Yemei Olam Moed Shebemidbar Arba'im Shana Chasar Achas. Okay, and so now we're basically going to do a sketch of history regarding the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll start off in the desert, 40 years. It's really 40 minus 1, because the first year they did not have a Mishkan. So Tanu Rabban Yemei Olam Moed Shebemidbar Arba'im Shana Chasar Achas. So in the desert was 40 years, really 39. Yemei Olam Moed Shebegugah Arba'a Asrei Zayin Shekishu V'Zayin Shechilko. And then we're going to move to the 14 years of Gilgal, 7 years of conquering, 7 years of division. Yemei Olam Moed Shebenov V'Givon Chamishim V'Sheva. 57 years now of being Nov and Givon. Now, yes, of course, we just skipped over Shiloh. You'll see why we skipped over Shiloh. Nishtairu L'Shiloh Gimel Meish V'Shivim Chaser Achas. That leaves for Shiloh 369 years. Now, what just happened in the Brisa over here is the following. Here's the number that the Brisa was working with. The number was 480. The number 480, how come the Brisa was working with that number? Very simple. Because the Navi tells us in the beginning of Sefer Malachim that 480 years after we left Egypt, so at that point in time, we built the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. And that's when Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. So what we're now doing is basically from there we're working backwards, meaning we now know to take off a certain number of years. Once we take off those certain number of years, so then what we're going to be left with is the number of years that the Mishkan was set up in Shiloh. So in other words, we're starting with 480 and we're really working our way backwards. So in other words, now you take the years that we just put together, a total of 111, deduct that from the 480, and that's how you got to 369. There is nowhere in the Navi that tells us that Shiloh was set up for 369 years, and that's why we have to work backwards from the year 480. Let's continue let's just finish up to the two dots. Now what the Braisa is going to basically do is just establish how do we know all the years that were given. In year one, Moshe was putting together the Mishkan, but it was only actually set up in the beginning of year two. Like we've said already numerous times, that the Mishkan actually started operating in Rosh Chodesh Nisan of year two. How do I know that was 14 years of conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael? So we're looking over here in the middle of Sefer Yehoshua, where Kalev is actually self-reporting that he was 40 years old when he was sent out to go scout the land. Vishmonim Shana. And then, so he was 40 years of age when he went to spy the land, and now he's reporting that he's 85 years old. So, Ki Avreli Yarden Bar Kamahava Bar Shivim Vitamne. So, how old was he when they crossed the Jordan? So, he was 78 years of age, meaning the Gemara is assuming that 38 years have transpired from the time that he spied until the time that they crossed the Jordan. V'kamer ben chamesh v'shmonim. So we're basically looking from 78 now to 85. That's 7 years. And this is now the beginning of the division of the land of Eretz Yisrael. So that's how we know. So basically just by gauging it by Kalev's life, so we know that it was 7 years of conquering. Harei sheva shekivshu. So that brings us to the 7 years of conquering. Sheva shechoko minalan. Now how do I know that it was 7 years of dividing the land? So the Gemara here says, viewpoint of the Gemara is that it's simply a svara. It's an argument that if it takes 7 years to conquer, it takes 7 years to divide the land. Also, we can arrive at this from a different vantage point, and that is based on a pasuk in Yechezkel. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi starts off on the right-hand column and goes to the top of the left-hand column. Rashi takes us through the years over here in terms of how we arrive from this pasuk in Yechezkel to the idea that it took 14 years in total to both conquer and divide the land. See the Rashi inside for a recap of how we got from the pasuk in Yechezkel to that conclusion. Okay, let's just quickly summarize for today. We finished off the five opinions and sourcing the five opinions and highlighting the differences between the five opinions in terms of what was offered during those 14 years in Gilgal, what was offered on the central location of Gilgal, and what was offered in people's backyards. After that, we then went and turned to Mishkan Shiloh. We talked structurally about Mishkan Shiloh being somewhat of a hybrid of being a house and a tent. It's a hybrid between the two. I made a suggestion earlier this morning in terms of why that should be. Then we talked about this halacha, that in Shiloh you can eat kashim kalim as long as you could see Shiloh. And then the Gemara explored the parameters of what exactly that means to see Shiloh. The Amoraim asked the number of questions regarding this halacha, that you're allowed to eat kashim kalim as long as you're in a vantage point where you could see Shiloh. Which territory was Shiloh in? So the simple answer is that it was in the territory of Yosef, although the Gemara does try to make an argument that it was in the territory of Binyamin, and the Amoraim discussed that. How long was Shiloh set up for? So 369 years. That number is not revealed to us in the Navi, but what the Gemara does is the Gemara puts together a whole bunch of other pieces of information to deduce from there that it was 369 years. We know that it was a total of 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and so from there we just simply subtract the number of years that we know that Shiloh did not exist, And so from there we go from 480, we uncovered 111 years where Shiloh did not exist. So 480 minus 111, that brings us to 369, which is what we concluded with in today's daf. Everyone have a wonderful day.